Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce you to the music you'll be hearing at the festival this summer. This season, we've designed one of our richest and most enchanting musical journeys yet. Russian Reflections illuminates the great dialogue between Russia and the West, from which Russian classical music grew into one of the most beloved of all musical traditions. Russia's musical culture is as elusive as it is irresistible. The soul of Russian music is impossible to capture with words. It is utterly unique. No one could have invented such a confoundingly glorious tradition. Russia's music is the sui generis expression of her people's experiences. Yet at the same time, many of the elements that distinguish Russian music ultimately defy cultural boundaries: love and death, passion and pathos, struggle and triumph. This summer's seven concert programs bring together Russian and Western composers to magnify the universal resonance of Russia's musical culture. We'll hear the romantic pathos of Rachmaninoff and Shostakovich alongside Schumann, Fauré, and Dvorak. We'll encounter the sophisticated elegance of Tchaikovsky next to music by Mozart and Mendelssohn. We'll marvel at the impeccable craftsmanship of Prokofiev, Taneyev, and Johannes Brahms. Each of these juxtapositions will cast Russia's musical identity into sharp relief, while also revealing an essential character that transcends any cultural divide. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by artistic co-director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts. The element of romance may well be the soul of Russian music, whether manifested in the lovelorn strains of Rachmaninoff's songs for voice and piano or in the provocative verse of Alexander Blok, set powerfully to music by Dmitri Shostakovich. Concert Program 4, Romance, places these composers alongside the mercurial German romantic Robert Schumann, the urbane Frenchman Gabriel Fauré, and the ardent Czech nationalists Antonín Dvořák and Leos Janáček, highlighting both the unique and the universal in Russia's musical passions.
Robert Schumann, by any measure a quintessentially romantic figure, was an artist with a lot to say. The pianist, composer, music critic, and erstwhile poet's biography reads like a Goethe tale. His courtship and marriage to Clara Wieck made for one of music history's most intense love affairs. He meanwhile dealt with crippling mental illness, which prompted a suicide attempt and subsequent hospitalization in the Bonn Asylum, where he died at 46. And of course, there are the hundreds of compositions, as well as diaries and other writings, produced along the way. Schumann felt life's joys and trials with frightening intensity. His yen to express those feelings bore one of the most piercingly emotive bodies of work in the Western canon. The Piano Trio No. 2 in F major, Opus 80, reflects the need to self-express that was so central to Schumann's artistic identity. The work consists of one deeply felt musical idea after another, flowing from the composer's pen with irrepressible energy. Its form is sprawling rather than classically tidy, as if struggling to contain its own narrative. In this, the trio captures Romanticism's penchant for extremes, as much as it manifests Schumann's fecund imagination. Schumann's music is often viewed through the lens of the composer's alter egos, Florestan, the extroverted hero, and Eusebius, the gentle, lyrical, and, in dated parlance, feminine counterpart to the masculine Florestan. The trio's brawny opening theme reveals the voice of Florestan through and through. Presented in galloping 6/8 time, the theme ranges across declamatory chords, surging legato lines, and invigorated charges of 16th notes. Thank you. The movement's second theme arguably remains the purview of Florestan. Though it begins softly, it retains the rhythmic vigor and adrenalized 16th note figures that came before. Eusebius enters on the appearance of a third musical idea, a tender melody, voiced piano e dolce, but still buoyed by a bubbling rhythmic energy. The melody quickly comes together with a fragment of the first theme and launches without warning into the fraught development section. A defiant fist-in-the-air gesture in the violin, derived from the movement's second theme, begins an intricate fugato passage. The development concentrates primarily on this melodic idea, later incorporating the legato Eusebius melody as well, to chart a broad emotive terrain. What at first appears to be developmental consideration of the first theme yields quickly to the unexpected arrival at the recapitulation. Schumann marks the trio's slow movement, mit innigem Ausdruck, with heartfelt expression. The movement is set in D flat major and features a suave melodiousness. The rhythmic blur of pulsing triplets in the piano, set against steady eighth notes in the strings, creates a hazy reverie. A change of key to A major brings music first of sober focus, then of devastating loveliness. This music dissolves in a gossamer passage in C sharp minor. A simple series of chords in the piano, decorated by quiet filigree in the violin, marks one of the trio's most magical moments. Variations of the suave opening idea recur throughout the movement. Schumann goes on to revisit subsequent musical ideas as well, stretching the canvas to encompass further harmonic territory. The final appearance of the opening musical idea shows it utterly transformed by the ravishing delicacy of Schumann's piano writing, as an ecstatic flow of 32nd note triplets flutters about the tune. A flirtatious third movement follows, its offbeat accents and slick melodic character answering the sentimental slow movement with seductive mystery. Schumann marks the outgoing finale nicht zu rasch, not too fast, but the movement demonstrates an inexorable energy, nevertheless. An eighth note moto perpetuo, uninterrupted almost from beginning to end, paces the finale, bringing the trio to an exhilarated conclusion. The program continues with Gabriel Fauré's Romance in B-flat Major, Opus 28, for violin and piano.
Fauré is a great master. For me, his music is incredibly special.
Pianist Michael Brown.
From his sort of early period, which is steeped in a true 19th century romantic tradition, to his late, often weird, late style, which gets increasingly chromatic, increasingly abstruse and hard to understand, maybe on the first, second, third, fourth, fifth listening.
Fauré noted that at the first hearing of the romance, the work, quote, was received with much grinding of teeth, end quote. This was at the home of Louis and Pauline Viardot, prominent figures among the Parisian cultural elite, to whose daughter Marianne Fauré was briefly engaged. At the second hearing, Fauré continued, the lights began to go on, and at third hearing it provoked comparison with a limpid stream coursing through green meadows. What a pity one cannot always begin with the third hearing.
But if you really stick with his style and his late music, I think it's really unlike anything else out there. But this piece he wrote, I believe, in 1877. It was, I think, performed in a salon setting. It's the perfect salon-type piece. It's very beautiful. This is a piece that deserves to be heard. It's very beautiful. It's in some ways simple. It has multiple sections. It's mostly the violin sort of has these melodies, melody and accompaniment type thing.
The limpid stream coursing through green meadows is certainly audible in the romance's opening. But what begins innocuously soon takes flight with virtuosic derring-do. A fast section in G minor visits a heady bout of Sturm und Drang on the idyllic scene.
Well, especially when you listen to the beginning of the work, which has a simplistic quality
so
to
innocuous.
It. And you think, how could this be interesting? It's very beautiful. But what he does with that and how he he makes his puts his own stamp on it, I think, which is a wonderful hallmark of his style. Kind of dovetailing this little slipping chromatically into various interesting keys and interesting harmonies all the time. You're almost never quite stable in his music, I think.
Just as his piano, chamber, and orchestral music offers a Central European analog to the equivalent work of his German Romantic counterparts, Antonín Dvořák's songs, which number over 100, follow in the lead tradition of Schubert and Schumann, peppered with the accent of his Bohemian heritage. Many of these use texts by contemporaneous Czech poets. The Opus 83 Love Songs set 8 poems by the Moravian poet and novelist Gustav Pfleger Moravsky. With an acuity likewise redolent of Schubert, Schumann, and Dvorak's mentor, Johannes Brahms, Dvorak captures the cadence and character of his countrymen's words in the melodic and rhythmic profile of his musical settings. Naturally, the singular meter and inflection of the Czech language, as opposed to the German texts set by Schubert and others, suggest a musical garb to match. Witness the irresistible bohemian flair of the third song of the set, Now I Stumble Past the House. But more than that, images and poetical ideas come to life through Dvorak's vivid musical imagination. In the sixth song of the Opus 83 set, Here in the Forest by a Brook, a limpid texture and pregnant fermatas evoke the poet's solitude. Midway through, anxious tremolandi in the piano, restlessly vacillating between minor triads and seventh chords, underpin the lines, "And that stone beneath the waves always rises and falls. The stone battles the waves and finally overturns." Tremolandi remain in the left hand of the piano accompaniment, even as the tumult subsides and the metaphor comes home. When will the waves of life finally sweep me away from this world? A similar matrimony between verse and setting is in evidence in the last of the set, O Dear Matchless Soul. Here, Dvorak sets the most candidly lovesick text of the cycle. O you, my soul's only dear one, who will live in my heart forever. My thoughts circle around you, even though cruel fate separates us. Oh, if I were a singing swan, I would fly to you, and with my last breath, sing my heart out to you. Ah, with my last breath. The softly cascading piano figurations surrounding the quarter note vocal melody, sung mezza voce, arm these words with a beguiling sincerity. The program juxtaposes Dvorak's Opus 83 love songs with an equally heartfelt utterance by Sergei Rachmaninoff, Sing Not to Me, My Beloved, from the composer's set of six songs, Opus 4. The set is among Rachmaninoff's early music, composed between 1890 and 1893. Like the solo piano music of this period, the Opus 4 songs demonstrate characteristically idiomatic keyboard writing. Though sparse relative to the hellfire of the famous C-sharp minor prelude, the piano accompaniment's clarity of texture surrounds the piercing vocal melody with Schubertian incisiveness. The song sets a text by Pushkin. The song's title, Sing Not to Me, My Beloved, and the ardent, expressive character of Rachmaninoff's setting might leave the impression of a jilted lover's torch song. But the prevailing sentiment is rather one of homesickness. Sing not to me, my beloved, your sad songs of Georgia. They remind me of that other life and distant shore. Alas, they remind me, your cruel melodies, of the steppe, the night, and moonlit features of a poor distant maiden. For Rachmaninoff, who loved Russia deeply and ached for his homeland after fleeing in the wake of the 1917 revolution, it was a short distance indeed between a lover's longing for his beloved and a Russian's nostalgia for home. While celebrated alongside Smetana and Dvorak as one of Czechoslovakia's greatest composers, Leoš Janáček likewise had a deep affinity for Russian culture. He visited Russia multiple times, spoke the language, and had a known fondness for Russian music and literature. He counted Dostoevsky, Gogol, Lermontov, Tolstoy, and Vasily Shukovsky among his favorite writers. Russian literature directly influenced Janáček's work on multiple occasions, most famously in the conception of his first string quartet, subtitled The Kreutzer Sonata, after the Tolstoy novella. Another instance is Pohádka, Janáček's duo for cello and piano.
Pohádka is a very unique work in the cello-piano repertoire.
Cellist Dmitry Etapin.
I find it an interesting moment. It's not so much a piece for me as a feeling, as a moment, as a kind of a picture. It was based by Janáček. He wrote it, if I'm not mistaken, around 1910 in its original form. And it was based on a Russian fairy tale by a poet, Zhukovsky, which was a fairy tale of Tsar Benderei. And if I'm not mistaken, Stravinsky based his Firebird on the same story. And it has all the characters that are usually present in Russian fairy tales. It has a Tsarevich, it has a Tsarevna, it has a Tsar, and it has this evil character of Kashey Besmertny, or Kashey the Undead, which is a kind of a creepy Tsar of the underworld. And so it's a love story. But what I find interesting about this piece is that instead of kind of a following the progression of the fairy tale, Janáček concentrates on three moments in the story and kind of paints three pictures. And so each one of the movements deals with the feeling, the perception, the ambiance, the character of the moment in the story, rather than telling you, you know, they went here and then they got happy, so music gets happy, and then they got sad and music gets sad. So it's not a kind of a linear depiction as you would find in a tone poem of, you know, say Tchaikovsky even, but it's rather three different moments in the fairy tale that not necessarily we know from the piece what happened in between.
The first movement begins with an enchanting piano introduction, punctuated by pizzicato gestures in the cello. This music immediately ignites the listener's imagination, transporting the ear to a long time ago in a land far, far away.
Also, in that fairy tale kind of philosophy, I find this music in a way slightly indifferent, and it has this kind of quality of someone telling the fairy tale. So it's not as if you are actually the characters, but I kind of hear this man start with, "Once upon a time, in a kingdom far, far away, oh, there was a beautiful princess," you know, and so that the story has this kind of narrator interspersed in between the action and the listener that has this kind of emotional detachment, and at the same time it has this character of kind of a vignette.
The music subsequently turns more enigmatic as the melody becomes fragmented and nearly inscrutable. The second movement begins with a playful game of leapfrog. The music suddenly slows. The piano issues a delicate legato melody, swathed in a glimmering 16th note texture. The three-note tale of the leapfrog gesture becomes the point of departure for a counter-melody in the cello. Soon thereafter, Janáček combines these two musical ideas, setting the pizzicato figure against the piano's flowing melody in the left hand, while the right hand interjects the leapfrog gesture. The cello grows agitated, recalling the pizzicato figure from the first movement, now remade into an anxious exclamation in its upper register. But from this cauldron of disquiet, the music quickly emerges in a blaze of blinding light. The movement ends with a smiling reminiscence of the opening measures, as if waking happily from a vivid dream. The contented demeanor of this music extends into the Allegro finale, a happy march that expands into a luxurious sunlit stroll. The program concludes with Dmitri Shostakovich's Seven Romances on Poems of Alexander Bloch for soprano and piano trio, composed in 1967.
At that time, 1967, the Bloch songs were written for the 50th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. And Shostakovich has nothing to prove. You know, he's a venerated master.
Pianist Michael Brown.
Towards the end of his life, he writes this big song cycle that has all sorts of important meaning for him, and especially, you know, having his life be as stark and difficult under this communist regime and censorship and all this stuff. I think this was a way for him to also put a little bit of his own personal touch into these difficult historical circumstances. But in terms of the music, in some ways, he thins out certain textures. And the piece begins with a long cello solo.
The suite comprises seven movements, each setting a poem by Alexander Bloch. The first, Ophelia's Song, is an expression of romantic sorrow imagined from the perspective of the ill-fated lover from Shakespeare's Hamlet.
And it's inspired by the symbolist poetry by Alexander Bloch, who lived during the time of the Russian Revolution. He died in 1921. And he was very much for the revolution at the time and found a way to justify the sheer violence that was associated with it. But the piece, like the early trio, has really wonderfully changing moods. I mean, they're the first one to the second one. The piano enters in a stark manner in the second one, and he keeps sort of bringing out this duality between poignant love, fervor, simplicity, and very dark, demonic qualities, and grotesque, I think. it's really wonderful how he chooses these little subsets and creates a real variety of texture, sonically and color is wonderful. And then how he relates all of this to the meaning, the sort of tone painting of the text in the poem. So he talks about violins in the text, and that's the violin movement.
We were together, I remember. The night was troubled. A violin sang. In those days, you were mine. Each hour, you grew more beautiful. Through the quiet murmur of a stream, through the secret of a woman's smile, your lips longed to be kissed. The sound of a violin begged to enter our hearts. Later in the suite, grief yields to fury, as in the fifth song, The Storm. Witness the striking effect of the violin playing sul ponticello, bowing near the bridge, to produce a frenzied sound above the piano's turbulent rhythm. After combining pairs of instruments out of the three throughout the suite, Shostakovich brings the full ensemble together only for the seventh and final song, Music. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Mozart's String Quintet in D Major, K593, performed by the Amadeus Quartet and Cecil Aronowitz. Mendelssohn's String Quartet in D Major, Opus 44, No. 1, and Tchaikovsky's String Quartet, No. 1 in D Major, Opus 11, performed by the Emerson Quartet. Janáček's Pohádka, performed by David Finkel and Wu Han, and Dvořák's 8 Love Songs, performed by Magdalena Kosena and Graham Johnson, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Glinka's Variations on a Theme of Mozart, performed by Petronell Milan, appears courtesy of Hensler Classics. Schumann's Piano Trio No. 2 in F Major, performed by Juho Pohonien, Arno Sussman, and David Finkel, appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Rachmaninoff's Sing Not to Me, Beautiful Maiden, performed by Joan Rogers and Malcolm Martineau, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Shostakovich's 7 Romances on Poems of Alexander Bloch, performed by Dina Kuznetsova, Georgia Flizanis, Ronald Thomas, and Gilbert Kalish, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Mozart's String Quintet in D Major, K593, performed by the Amadeus Quartet and Cecil Aronowitz. Mendelssohn's String Quartet in D Major, Opus 44, No. 1, and Tchaikovsky's String Quartet, No. 1, in D Major, Opus 11, performed by the Emerson Quartet. Janáček's Pohádka, performed by David Finkel and Wu Han. And Dvorak's 8 Love Songs, performed by Magdalena Kosena and Graham Johnson, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Glinka's Variations on a Theme of Mozart, performed by Petronell Milan, appears courtesy of Hensler Classics. Schumann's Piano Trio No. 2 in F Major, performed by Juho Pohonian, Arno Sussman, and David Finkel, appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Rachmaninoff's Sing Not to Me, Beautiful Maiden, performed by Joan Rogers and Malcolm Martineau, appears courtesy of Hyperion Records. Shostakovich's 7 Romances on Poems of Alexander Bloch, performed by Dina Kuznetsova, Georgia Flizanis, Ronald Thomas, and Gilbert Kalish, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.